Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So a little background that I am owner and founder of I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing, and I am on a mission to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and to empower people, especially adults, to own their voice and talents that come in so many different forms. So I created this space to talk with people with all different kinds of jobs, hobbies, and interests, and to have conversations about experiences and perspectives all centered around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? Then we have a free-flowing conversation and we see where it goes. So I am so grateful to have had the opportunity to talk with so many different people who do all different kinds of things. I've spoken to musicians, Reiki masters, mediums, doctor, lawyer, real estate agents, entrepreneurs as young as 13, and so many more. And these conversations explore the reality that creativity is not cute, it is necessary. People have defined creativity as their soul's essence, courage, imagination, basically all that we are and want to be. So I believe that sharing these stories expands one's thinking, opens up self-expression to feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So my inspiring guest for today is Helen Hardware. Helen is the soulful confidence coach and helps spiritual entrepreneurs to have the confidence to be visible online by clearing their mindset blocks so that they feel unstoppable. Helen helps her clients to find the root cause of their visibility fears, both in this life and past lives, and to connect to their higher self, to unleash their natural confidence and courage to be visible as their authentic self and make their unique impact on the world. Helen, welcome to the space. And I want to welcome all those that are here live. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello.
Helen, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here.
I am so happy that you are here. And again, I want to welcome the people that are here live. You can connect with us by typing in any questions or comments in the chat box where we can see them. So Helen, after reading just that little bit about you, could you please give us just a little bit more of whatever you'd like to share about your journey before we dive into the questions?
Yeah, sure. So I have a background in the corporate world. I was a lawyer and then I went into financial services. But I never really felt that I was good enough. I was always chasing the next thing to try and prove myself. And then about 4 years ago, I hit burnout, which was in part a spiritual awakening. And I had this sense, this calling that I needed to set up a spiritually inspired business. And my first idea was I was a qualified yoga teacher, or I am a qualified yoga teacher, and I wanted to teach yoga for other people that had been through burnout because that was so important for me. All sounds great until I actually tried to do it and put myself out there. And I hit this brick wall and I was looking around and going, this is crazy. I'm an intelligent woman, you know, I'm an ex-lawyer, I'm very capable. So why can't I take action and get myself out there and get visible with this business idea? And I just couldn't work it out. I just couldn't understand why I wasn't good enough to do it. And it just reaffirmed that belief I had yet again that I wasn't good enough. So I kind of, you know, went away, tail between my legs, and thought, no, it's not for me. But that calling to have a spiritual inspired business just didn't go away. And a couple of years later, I then retrained as a hypnotherapist. And when I came to build my business and put myself out there again, what do you think happened? All the same fears showed up. And this time I knew enough about the mind to say, well, hang on a minute, what's going on? So I went on this deep transformational journey of understanding who I was and why I was having these issues, putting myself out there, taking action, I was procrastinating. And what I uncovered along that journey was a series of fears around not being good enough, but around fear of rejection, fear of judgment or criticism of others, fear of failure, and fear of success. You know, what if I actually was successful with this and it changed me in some way and I couldn't connect to my family and my friends and I didn't have any time for myself anymore? So I had all these limiting beliefs going on underneath the surface, which the first time around, I didn't even know they were there. They were held in my subconscious mind or my unconscious mind, and they were just influencing my behavior without any conscious awareness. So as I went through that journey and I started to uncover the root cause of these fears, I then started to strip them away. And as I stripped them away, I then started to uncover experiences from past lives as well as from childhood. And the more I did that and the more I was able to free myself up to take action and get confident to be seen, the more I was attracting other people who were feeling exactly the same way and wanting to know how I'd done it. And then they started going back to past lives as well. And that just kind of grew. So it's become this this essence of this bubble of healing from this life and past life, so that we can get to our root cause underneath, who we are, as a, you know, who our authentic self is at the core of it. And then when we find our authentic selves, we don't worry about what anybody else thinks. Those fears just fall away.
Yeah. I'm so excited to dive into this more and to ask more questions. A question that I do have is that when you had the first kind of thing kind of go through with Kundalini yoga and you were like, this isn't going to work. And you said it was a few years until you went into your next spiritual awakening. What were you doing in that in-between time? Were you still trying to make anything work, or did you go back to being a lawyer, or what did that process look like?
So, I was still in my corporate career. I actually left law a long time before that. I actually only stuck 15 months in law, and I had this crippling anxiety because I didn't believe that I was good enough. I had a belief, and I didn't realize it at the time, that people like me don't become lawyers. So I'd left law a long time before and was in financial services. So it was always one of those dreams to kind of set up the business on the side of the desk and then leave and do full time sort of thing. I just kind of dismissed that calling and said, well, you know, I tried. I really hadn't tried. And I really hadn't told many people that I wanted to do it because I was too afraid of failing and being seen to fail.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm so looking forward to diving into this. That whole word dismissed, procrastination, like, yeah, they're such powerful words.
They are.
They really are. Okay. So let's start with our would you rather, and then we will dive into our first question. So, okay, Helen, you ready?
Sure.
Would you rather live on a sailboat or in an RV?
Oh, an RV.
That was fast. Like, not even a question.
Well, I have a camper van, a VW camper van, so I can imagine that. I'm not sure. Mean boats. I don't know. I love the water, but I like to be in the water rather than on it.
Yeah, yeah. So you have a camper?
Yeah.
Oh, so do you guys take it out very often?
You know what? We only got it at the start of this year, and with lockdown and everything else, we've only been on a few little adventures with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I saw this question, I was like, it is very time appropriate. There's been like more RVs, I think, than ever, because people have, you know, it works for this time, especially. So let's dive into the first question. So, Helen, how do you define creativity?
So when you said that you're going to ask me this, I had one of those kind of, oh my God, that's like describing the color yellow moments. So I really sat and thought about it. And what came up was an expression of the soul. Mm. It's originality of thought, expression, anything that transcends what has been done before. Now, that can be in, you know, any way, shape or form. For me, it, you know, it shows up through many, many ways. It's speaking your soul's voice, but that might not be an audible voice. It can be through any other type of expression.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask, I'm just going to dive in and ask about the whole past life thing, because this speaking a soul's voice. So I'm wondering, when we go into these, well, let me just dive in and ask. So soul's voice, do you see it as if we've lived many lives that we carry this one voice throughout them, or does it change in the different bodies that we're in?
I think it's a combination of both. So the way I understand it and the things that I've seen from my clients is, as souls, we're kind of a wash and repeat type process. So we reincarnate over and over to learn new things and have new experiences. And just like in this lifetime, every experience we have changes who we are in some way, shape or form. Our souls morph, grow and develop over time. But if we don't learn what it was that we came into this lifetime to learn, then we get into a repeat cycle until we learn it. And so in that sense, we'd have the same voice potentially over and over. But over time, as we learn those lessons, we grow and develop just as adults. You know, we've grown and developed and found our voice from when we were children.
Mm-hmm. So it could take 40 lifetimes in order to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interesting. It's just so cool to me. So talk to me about this whole, so the journey, this whole word visibility. So let's dive into that word visibility and what you think it means.
So visibility for me is being in the public arena for the thing that you are good at or want to be known at. And I mean that from a soul level rather than an ego level, but obviously ego can come into play as well. And there's no right, no wrong there. So visibility is about my definition for my clients is your soul aligned clients knowing who you are and how you can help them in a way that, you know, that supports them wanting to buy from you. Because I principally work with entrepreneurs.
Okay. So it's visibility. This word came to me also. And I was just very excited to be talking to you about it. So with my companies, I am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing. My multi-author book, which I told you about, the new one is Invisible No More, Stepping Into the Spotlight. And loving and so excited to hear stories from people on what this means to them, Invisible No More, because everybody has a different thing attached to it. And for me, it was very much about being shy. And a lot of the whole thing, like you mentioned, with worthiness and not using my voice, this whole expression, why would anybody listen to me? Am I good enough at this? And it started when I was younger and then went up to about my 20s where I started to be like, enough of this. Like, no. And anyway, fast forward to now, it's gotten to a point where my mission is bigger than me. So it's bigger than these fears. It's bigger than... am I worthy? It's like, enough of that already. Like, this needs to get out because it's important and it's not about me.
Absolutely. And I completely agree. And I love that. I think the next book title is just so beautiful. And visibility doesn't have to be about sales. I use that as a reference point because my clients are principally entrepreneurs who are struggling to take that action and get into the public arena. And make sales because they're not telling people how amazing they are. But that does not limit it to entrepreneurs. We're all amazing. We're all unique. We all bring something to this world. We've all got a light inside of us that is special to us. And the more that we know that we're good enough, the more that we can tap into our authentic self and speak our truth, then we become stronger. We become magnetic as well. Other people, the right people, people who are vibrationally aligned to us are naturally attracted to us. Because when we know our own worth, they see it in us too.
Yeah, it's true. That whole magnetism. And it's just interesting how the whole thing of how you perceive yourself and how others perceive you. I just recently had... It is. I recently had my human design done. Have you had that?
I have, yeah, I'm a manifesting generator.
So there are you? What am I? I forget what I am. But it just stood out to me. I just remember the one part where she was saying, she was defining for me how people see me and how you can use it for in your business, to be able to know how to talk to people and see what your strengths are and all this kind of stuff. And I remember questioning her and I was like, but I don't feel that way. And she's like, the whole point is this is how they see you. It's not how you see yourself.
And it's a really great exercise to do, to actually go out to people and ask them to tell you how they perceive you, and what do they think your gifts and your skills are? What are your strengths?
Yeah. And obviously asking people, ladies and gentlemen, people that you trust that aren't just going to cut you down
Oh, absolutely.
and be mean to you because they're like, "Oh, perfect opportunity for me to tell you."
And then that's also, an indication, can be an indication of self-worth. If they're the people that are surrounding us that are the only people we can go to, or those that are going to strip us down, that's a big indication that there needs to be some self-love first before you can then change that and feel empowered to change who is around you as well.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about, so when you went into this space of like past life regression, how did that feel for you initially? Were you like, oh yeah, past life regression, or were you like, oh, I'll give this a try?
Definitely kind of like, oh wow, this is amazing. So initially I kind of accidentally went there. One of my very, very first clients as a hypnotherapist went back to past lives and between lives as well. And I'd literally probably had four or five clients at that point. So I'm sat there thinking, okay, this is really interesting.
Wait, wait,
What's going
wait.
on?
Between lives. Tell me, what do you mean by between lives?
Well, in her words, she was floating in the universe, and that was her assessment of it. When we tried to identify where she was just floating in the universe. She was held by pure love. She was part of everything. She was connected to everything. She was everything, and she could see the stars, but she was just at one and at peace. And when I asked her afterwards, what she thought that was, where was she? In her words, she was in between lives, and she
Wow.
also regressed to a past life as well. So she went back to being in a European city in the end of the war, seeing the desolation of a bombed city, and just being so heartbroken by the destruction and the loss and the death and the pain, and how that we just didn't need that as a human society.
Wow. So you started, so here you are, a hypnotherapist taking people through. So when you started the journey for yourself, you were like, oh, this is like interesting to me. So did you know the person who did this for you the first time, or did you just kind of find somebody?
So I actually accidentally ended up there myself in exactly the same way. I was working on a block, and I'd worked on it quite a few times, but it was sticking. It didn't seem to shift. So I put myself deep into trance and went back, and lo and behold, there I was, a Victorian street urchin. And I'm sat there thinking, okay, this is interesting. And then all three regressions that I did for that block all took me back to past lives. In fact, so much so that I was so stunned, so excited, so shocked, I actually forgot to do the healing work. I was just a bit of a tourist looking at the lives and forgot to do the healing bit. So they weren't that effective. But what I did do then was I found somebody that I trusted that I could work with, and I went and had a past life session with them, and it reaffirmed to me that this was something I wanted to do. So I went and did additional training, specializing in advanced past life regression. And my teacher has trained with a lot of the really great names in the industry. So Brian Weiss, Dolores Cannon, and and the name escapes me, there's another one that he'd worked with, Michael Newton. So he'd been trained by all three of them, which is why I trained with him. And that was exceptional, just learning new skills and being able to take people deliberately into, you know, those different times in our life and heal blocks and release old soul contracts that we've made, so that we can disconnect what we don't need from those lives. Just like every life we go through, you know, as we're growing up now, we all pick up baggage, and we do that through our past lives as well. But if we don't let go of the bags, then we tend to carry it with us and it weighs us down. But when we can recognize that that's what it is and that we don't need it, we can simply let it go.
How do you talk to people? Obviously, the people coming to you are ready to be like, yes, help me with this. But when you're initially talking to people about this, how do you kind of put them at ease about this? Because the idea of going back into a past life can be scary.
It can. And somebody asked me this morning whether you can get stuck in a past life. And I can understand, you know, the questions and the thought processes. So most of the time, by the time, you know, people come to me, they are ready. But it is just about understanding their belief system, because hypnosis, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. Although a hypnotherapist, you know, will guide through a process and use tools and techniques to help you, actually all hypnosis is a result of the client. And therefore, if they don't believe in hypnosis or they don't believe in past lives, then nothing's going to happen. It is very much something that you have to be invested in and committed in. That said, there are cases where people, you know, do fall into trance despite the fact that they publicly claim they don't believe in it. Then their unconscious certainly does. But with past lives, it's more a case of understanding what it is that they want to get out of it. I don't really like to do what you call tourist trips, just doing it for the sheer hell of, hey, I'm really interested, you know, what happened? Was I Cleopatra in a past life?
Right.
In fact, my client this morning complained at the end of her session. We went into two past lives in depth, and she said at the end, I'm really disappointed that my past lives were so boring. One of her past lives, she was killed by a polar bear. So I don't think it was that boring.
Oh my God.
What it reaffirms for me is that past lives generally are very ordinary. And that to me is what makes it more believable. So if somebody comes and says, you know, I want to prove past life regression by going into it, then that's not the type of work I do. What I do is a healing modality, and it's not a tourist trip. It's about doing deep inner personal work and developing our soul, developing who we are, and being able to let go of any old baggage. And in fact, the client that I was working with this morning had a pattern of things that was happening in her life, and she just wanted to understand whether that was something that she'd brought over from a past life, in effect karma. What we found was a past life where she'd had a similar experience, and that past life self was able to communicate with her and tell her what she'd wished she'd been able to do. And from that, my client then got that freedom to know that she has a choice now, and she can choose to change that pattern if she wishes to. And she got insight as to how she might do that.
Wow, I love that. Ladies and gentlemen listening, thank you so much again for being here live. If you have any questions or comments, please put them in the chat box, because this is juicy stuff. I'm just loving this idea of this belief, just that when you really want to heal, when you really want to do the healing and finding out what the core of it is and where it's stemming from, is just power. And what you do with it is what you do with it. When I had my Akashic record done, I think I spoke to you about this when we initially spoke, did our pre-chat, but one of the parts of it said basically that this was the one section that I've had, you know, like 80 lives or whatever, and they wanted to let me know about this one particular story and how it kind of relates to me now. And as I read it, I was like, oh my gosh. And I read it to my kids, and my kids were like, she could have looked you up. because it was like, I was like a nun in Boston area, and I was teaching art to kids, and, you know, I've been an art teacher for 30 years and leaving and starting my companies and in the past 3 years. But, you know, I was passionate about it, and I was visible you know, it was just like a passion. And then I realized that I think a priest was doing something to the kids, and I voiced what was going on, and I was killed. And I took it with me that I felt so bad that there was a fire and kids were killed in the fire. And that I kind of had to work through that. So it's just interesting because I've always worked in underserved populations. It's a population I'm passionate about and all this. So anyway, in saying all of that, I was like, wow. So many similarities.
And we do carry patterns through, certainly. You know, I've had many clients, because a lot of my clients are, as I say, entrepreneurs. A lot of them are healers and struggling with that identity as a healer and not really understanding why they're finding that so difficult to believe in their gifts, to believe in their power. You know, they've done their training and they've seen that they can heal or help others to heal, because, you know, it's same as all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. All healing really is self-healing. But they don't understand why their confidence is holding them back. And when we go back, they may have been a herbalist in a past life who was, you know, rejected or cast out. I had another client who was a medium in a past life and had to keep it quiet because her husband didn't like her doing that work and, you know, would be very challenging. Other healers that I've worked with have been killed for their healing abilities in past lives. I had a client who went back to being in the Middle Ages in Bavaria, and she was an energy healer, and the local priest took exception to it because it didn't align with what he was teaching in the church, and a mob went and tracked her down and slit her throat. And, you know, for her, that suddenly explained why speaking out, speaking her truth, and moving into her healing modality was so challenging for her.
It's so freaking powerful. It's so cool. It really is this journey. Like when you open yourself up and to the belief and the awareness, there's just so many possibilities to be for healings.
There is. And there's no one, you know, one size fits all. There's so many modalities and there's benefit in all of them. It's about just finding something that you can really connect with and really resonate with.
Yeah. Love that word, connection. So let's dive into the next question, which is just to get to know you a little bit more and how you actually incorporate more creativity into your own life.
So I've always considered myself creative, but not artistic, if that makes any sense. So I've never been, in my view, I've never been very good at drawing or art or anything like that. But what I was as a child was very musical. I saw a famous violinist doing a roly-poly while playing the violin when I was about 5 on TV. And that was it. I just wanted to learn to play violin more than anything in the world. No toys could do it. I wanted a violin. And there I was, age 5. And I didn't get to learn until I was 7 because nobody would teach me until then. So music's always been a very, very big, important part of my life. Mm-hmm. I ended up doing a music degree and then turned my back on it for many, many years. But it's actually only in the last couple of years that it's come back into my life. I play crystal singing bowls, so crystal tones, alchemy bowls, which are just mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And I also play the piano.
Cool. So the first of all, the whole idea about drawing and painting, this is what I'm here to squash. I'm here. That's why I Am Creative exists. That's why this podcast exists. This is why my publishing house exists, is to expand the societal definition of what creativity is. It makes me crazy. It is my biggest pet peeve, because being an art teacher, you know, with that label, the niceties of what you do, now it's entrepreneur and creative inspirer, I would say, creative advocate. But, you know, going to art school and all that, people would say, oh, immediately there's a very much of a defensiveness. I don't know how to draw or paint. I'm like, well, neither do I. Like, just because I went to art school doesn't mean that's what I do. I actually studied ceramics. It's not really my forte. So my whole mission here is to expand this whole definition and empower people to see what their talents are, to see where their voice lies. Because I believe that creativity is expression. That's kind of my definition. But I love this. So with music, you were 5 years old, wanted to play the violin, started at 7. Did you, when you kind of weren't doing music for a while, was that because you were just caught up in life, or was there something where you just, why do you think that happened?
I think it was a combination. Yeah, I totally got caught up in life. So I, you know, music was the core part of my life until I was 21 and left university. And I think I just needed some time out. I you know, played for several hours a day for many, many years. And I wasn't a natural musician. I'm still not. And I think there was an ego hit there when I went to university and found that I wasn't as good as a lot of my peers. I knew that I was never going to be a professional musician. I wasn't at that standard. And that was a bit of an ego hit. So I think I just needed some time to recalibrate and come back to music for the sheer love of doing it. I've had other creative passions along the way as well, and I've always had something to keep me going creatively. So I used to sew patchwork quilts. I did that for a number of years, but there's only so many family members you can give them away to. every new baby in the family got one for several years. I've also done silversmithing, and I did stained glass making for a while. I make candles and my own soap. So there's always been, you know, little things going on in the background, crafty things, that is some kind of creative outlet. And I know that if I don't have some kind of creative outlet, it impacts how I feel. I need that expression. It's part of my well-being. It's, you know, it supports my mental health as well.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Because I think some important things that you said where you needed to recalibrate, it kind of took an ego hit because you realized it wasn't going to be like your life being a musician, but it's something that you really enjoy and that you're passionate about. And I think that's important for people to hear in things, that when you're doing things, it doesn't mean that you have to be an expert at it. It doesn't mean that it has to be your job per se, but it's something that brings you well-being and mental health, like mental health freedom. That's what I'm talking about here, and this is what I want to expand the definition to foster so people can recognize it, you know?
Absolutely. And I actually only got a piano a few months ago after our last lockdown, because throughout the three lockdowns we've had in the UK, I kept thinking, God, I've got all this time. I wish I'd got a piano to play. I wish I'd got a piano to play. And I think half the country were thinking that, because they were a lot harder to find after that. But as soon as lockdown lifted, that was the thing that I went out and got a piano. And I can't tell you how much pleasure and how much joy it's brought into my life. And I was uncomfortable when I first got it, that I hadn't played for 20 years. So how bad was it going to be? And I bought an electric piano simply so I could put headphones on so that nobody else in the house could hear me play, because I was so embarrassed that I might have lost some skill level. And actually, I've never plugged them in. I just enjoy playing for me, and I discovered that I'm not as bad as I thought I was, and actually I'm just playing for the sheer pleasure of it.
Yeah. Someone shared, a fellow art teacher shared this post, which I thought was just so amazing in the beginning of everything with COVID, and it was a letter from a second grade teacher, and it was basically to the specialist teachers. So, you know, music, art, gym, yoga, like whatever that looks like in the schools. But basically saying that she was sorry. And she was sorry that she never took the time seriously for her kids. She just saw it as a time to drop her kids off and have, you know, a prep period, which as teachers, we appreciate that. But she didn't see the value until with COVID. She realized everything that, what did we turn to during this time? We turned to movement, which looked like exercise, yoga, meditation, whatever that looked like in people's worlds, to some kind of visual art, potentially music, cooking, dance. People turned to that for joy. It was the first thing. So, or maybe it wasn't the first thing, but people found it. Many people found it, and they found joy and happiness. So she said, I'm sorry. And you're actually the most important teachers in the school, which I just thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, completely agree with that. And it is so, so important. And it's something that I think here in the UK, we're really seeing challenges in the education system with the arts. And it does break my heart because I know I had so many opportunities as a child with music. I was very lucky. My parents were very supportive, especially letting a five-year-old have a violin for Christmas. I mean, I don't know how they coped with the noise, but yeah, it is something that I think has been really impacted and not in a positive way. So I do worry about the next generation of children, whether they're going to have those same opportunities.
And I think just, again, expression in general, for kids and for adults to be able to find that space where they feel strengthened. I mean, some people, for them, like, numbers are a happy place. Some people like to invent things, and it's, you know, it could be the inventors, it could be sciences, it could be the business world where you're creating joint ventures and sculpting and shaping contracts and all of this. Like, it looks different for different people. And I think that when people step into it, they feel worthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that creative expression is very much a part of who we are. I don't, as human beings, I don't think we can take our creative expression out. It's just an inbuilt component, any more than we could not breathe. You know, everything that we do is a creation in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And I think that's when life changes. I mean, I know for me, and you can speak to your situation with being in corporate and then trying different things and then removing the blocks. For me, when I had this transformation at 51, when I was given a piece of paper saying, "Are you coming back in the fall?" And I was like, "No, I'm not." Like, I kind of stepped into that, you know what? I'm worthy of this. I'm ready for this. I don't know how it's going to turn out exactly, but there was such a feeling, like an inner knowing, that this was the time. And it was the time because I needed to do it for me to learn all these lessons to be at this point 3 years later, which I never would have imagined. That's incredible. But also, you know, being in a place with my family, it was the best choice that I could have made.
And I think that's really important, what you just said about it being for you. I think we can run away from issues and, you know, decide not to go back because you don't like what something is. But are we doing it for ourselves, or are we doing it to avoid a problem? And that's where the self-awareness comes in, and the personal development, and knowing that you're making a change for the good. And the good of who you are and your ability to speak your truth and embrace all that you are.
Yeah. Speaking your truth and getting to the root cause of your fears, like what you spoke about in the beginning, like all of these things, it's very easy to, I think it can be easy. It doesn't feel good, but we can kind of skirt over the issues and just kind of be a victim and blame others, blame ourselves, beat ourselves up, whatever, because we don't want to do the work. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I see that sometimes with potential clients. You know, if somebody comes to me because they're expecting that I'm going to fix them, then, you know, that's not usually somebody that I work with, because I need to lead them to the point where they are ready to do the work on themselves. I don't have a magic wand, and I'm not going to fix somebody else. But what I can do is, when they're ready, help them and guide them on the path to be able to fix themselves.
Yeah.
And in fact, when I say fix, that's the wrong word, because nobody's broken. You know, we talk about being broken, but nobody is ever broken. It can be a word that's associated with that victim mindset. So it's about just guiding people to come back to their wholeness, really.
Yeah. When I say the word magic, what do you think of when I say the word magic?
Oh, so many things. Instantly, I went to that space between lies, floating around in the universe, feeling absolutely at one with everything. Being in a state of flow in this lifetime where, you know, things are just manifesting because you are just in that right energetic vibrational state where things are just coming to you.
Mm-hmm. It does feel like magic, doesn't it? It just it's like this vibration where you're just like literally your body is just like it's like humming.
Totally. And I went on holiday last week for, and it's the first what I would call proper holiday. In other words, I got to leave the UK for nearly 2 years. And just that relaxation of suddenly letting go and saying, okay, I am just here to be present, setting an intention to be deeply relaxed, to feel the sun on my face, which we don't get so much of in the UK, and just allowing myself to relax, suddenly started manifesting left, right, and center. Little things like we got an upgrade from a room to a suite. Got a refund of some money that I was due, which equated to the price of the holiday. So therefore, the holiday was in free. A healer that I highly respect and right now don't have the budget to work with reached out to me and said, I love what you're doing and I'd like to offer you a free session.
Oh my gosh.
So all these amazing things just fell into my lap and it was like, oh, that's what happens when you let go and you get back to a state of joy.
So how do you suggest what advice do you give to people when they're like, okay, I'm relaxed. I'm relaxed. I'm relaxed. And then you're like having all this self-talk, this chatter. You're like, wait a minute, that's not going to make me relax. And then you start arguing with yourself.
So when a client sits down at the beginning of the session, and the first thing I say to them is just make themselves nice and comfortable and relax. Whenever you're told relax, let's face it's not a human response that you can do. So although I use that language, what I then do is get them to connect to their breath. And the minute you say, just observe your breath, their breaths will naturally become longer. We don't necessarily mean to do it, it's just a human instinct. And as those breaths get longer, it starts to slow down. And I can never remember which way around they are, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system, but it moves the body into the rest and restore phase and out of the stress. By doing some eye exercises, we can actually slow the brain waves down. So when we're talking right now, we're in a beta brain wave. And when we're really stressed and we're really, really busy and we're all go, 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 that's a high beta brain wave. But hypnosis uses an alpha brain wave, which is the same brain wave that we use just before we go to sleep at night. And it's a creative brain wave, actually. So you know how a lot of very creative people say that they do their best work very late at night? That's because we're naturally in an alpha brain wave at that point. So just by helping them to focus on their breath, we may do some breathing exercises, getting them to focus their eyes up as if they were looking into the middle of the forehead. That puts a strain on the optic nerve, which then triggers something inside and produces a chemical reaction in the brain, and it starts to naturally slow the brain waves down. So those two things together naturally slow us down, put us into a state of relaxation. And the other thing that I love to do with clients is, as they're getting into that relaxation, is then get them to tighten everything and tension. And then as they breathe out, let go. Because as we let go, we'll relax a little bit more and do that a few times until I can observe that they are starting to relax. They've started to become loose and the muscles are gently letting go.
It's like releasing this control.
Totally. Although in hypnosis, you are still in control. It's a myth that we surrender control. Control is an illusion. We never really have any control anyway, because if we did, we could choose to surrender it. So it's about recognizing that we have a choice to surrender.
Oh, I love that. Recognizing we have a choice to surrender. It feels so good when we do. Sometimes it's just for me, I can say, sometimes it's just out of exhaustion. It's like, fine. Okay, I give up. But it's a relief because we realize I've learned that it's okay to dive into that and just be like, I'm surrendering. It is, yep, not what it is, what it is. I don't like that saying. I find it kind of annoying. But yeah, just surrender. And like you said, that's where those things come to you when you're all of those beautiful things came to you, the refund, the person reaching out to you. If you tried to sit there and figure it all out on how it was going to happen, it wouldn't happen.
It wouldn't. And a mutual friend of ours, a dear friend Mary, actually gave me a mantra yesterday that I loved, which is I surrender, I release, I remember. And I think, I mean, I'm definitely going to bring that into my client sessions because, you know, we do remember our past lives and we have to surrender and release to get there.
Surrender and release. There was something else I was going to ask you before I got to the third question. What was I going to ask you? Okay. I don't know. Just thinking out loud. There we go. So let's get to the third question, which is basically everything we've talked about and just kind of wrapping it up really nicely. So why do you think that creativity is important?
Two reasons for me. Number one, it's fun. It really is. I'm in a state of flow because I'm enjoying it when I'm being creative. And it does change our brainwave. But also it changes perspective. And that's possibly something to do with the fact that it does slow our brainwave down. But when you're creating, you have to challenge yourself to think differently. Because really, it's an originality of thought and expression. And therefore, you kind of have to think what hasn't been done before. And that changes the perspective because you can think of the things that have been. Like it's like a multifaceted crystal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're finding a new facet that we didn't know was there. Or maybe even cutting a new facet on the stone that we are. Mm-hmm. And it teaches us to step out of our comfort zone. And that's so important for soul growth. You know, with my clients as entrepreneurs, yeah, we have to get uncomfortable being uncomfortable. So being creative and doing something new is like a sampler, a play area for us to practice doing that by creating. You know, we do create a vulnerability of rejection or criticism. And that's okay.
Yeah, it is. Our son, who is 21, has been doing sales and never thought he'd be getting into this area, but he wanted to challenge himself and doing door-to-door sales. And that is not easy. And I just thought of it because of the whole thing about rejection. Like he has such a thick skin now that nothing bothers him. He's been told to F off, you know, many times, doors slammed in his face. Interesting things. We joke. I'm like, so what happened today? And there's been multiple stories of funny things, but he's comfortable with himself that he's learned as an entrepreneur, in a sense, the words to use, how to speak and get at a person's pain point quickly. Basically the amount of time that you have to say what you need to say to get their attention, to kind of get a read on people's body language and see how responsive they're going to be to you. And not take it personally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember having a go at telesales when I was 19, and I only lasted 3 days. The culture was toxic when I look back. Mm-hmm. In the office, if you didn't sell, then there was a walk of shame.
Oh my gosh! Seriously,
yeah, awful. Yeah, you were given a blank check because you and everyone applauded you because you hadn't made a sale. It really was very narcissistic, and it taught me at the time that was not something that I was able to do. I wasn't ready at that time to learn to take that level of rejection. Now I look at it and realize that I learned a lot from it. I went on and did sales in other roles and loved it because it was done in a very different way. But we learn from every experience that we have.
I mean, that's just degrading. That kind of
lasted 3 days.
Well, yeah, the fact that you even lasted 3 days is like, that's a long time. Yeah. Yeah. These kind of situations it's interesting. I had a, sales in a, why can't I talk today? Sorry. Clothes in a department store in the junior department. And we had to sell a certain amount of credit cards and just wasn't interested in that. When people tell me no, I'm like, okay. And they'd say, Hollis, you have to sell more credit cards. I'm like, why? To put people more in debt than they want to be? I don't agree with that. That's not something that I want to propagate. So, I didn't last. I lasted there for a certain period of time, but I'm also not very competitive. So that that's kind of what you learn too about yourself in certain situations. I don't know how you are with that, you know, where people can kind of be bribed with, well, you'll get a gold star for this. I'm just kind of like, eh.
So I think it's got to be something that's within our value structure. And, you know, that goes back to hypnosis again. You know, you can't make somebody in hypnosis do something that's outside of their values. The mind just has a protection mechanism which switches off and says, no, I'm not doing it. I am quite a competitive person, naturally. And I think the carrot that's dangled has got to be something that is of interest and valued. I worked for Gap when I was a student. And we have a very different culture for sales in the UK to the US. And Gap being an American company, you know, having somebody stood on the door saying, hi, how are you? You know, have a great day when they leave. That is just so not what we do or what we want in England. Okay. Having somebody walk up to you when you're looking at jeans and saying, can you find your size? Do you need any help? Our instant reaction as Brits is to kind of go, no, I'm fine, and walk away instantly. So it was about having to learn to do that in a way where I could be helpful, but I wasn't getting in the way of the British mentality. And I learned to just go up and say, hey, are you okay with the sizes? Because they're US sizes, which are a bit different. So if you've got any questions, my name's Helen and I'm over there. Just give me a shout if you need anything. And that made people feel at ease, because I'd always been intimidated by looking at the sizes in Gap and thinking, well, what the hell does this mean? You know, if I pick up a size 12, these are huge. Well, compared to a size 12 in the UK, you know, it's just a comparison. So it helped them get over that feeling of being uncomfortable because they didn't understand something, and just gave them that confidence that it was okay to ask for some help with it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, when you said that, it just made me think of like an awareness. You have an awareness. You're actually listening. You're looking at the culture and understanding how to make tweaks where you need to make tweaks, which I think is very important, rather than thinking it's a one size fits all.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about that, I say, your value structure as well.
Yeah, yeah. So there's so much creativity and all that. When you look at it in those terms of, I think like listening and observation is so key in everything that you do. To be able to see how, you know, where to make the tweaks and what people really want, what people want to hear.
And I think it's about learning that it's okay to make mistakes and to, you know, turn around and change something and say, okay, that didn't work, but I learned from it. You know, maybe that wasn't the right way of doing it. And it's about making those mistakes. And actually that comes back to the past life regression, because what I found when I started going back to past lives was like, mm-hmm. Well, hell, I don't have to get it all perfect this time around. You know, I have perfectionist tendencies that I've been working through for a while. But it's okay. I don't have to get it all right in this life, because I can just come back and have another go if I don't get it right. So it made the whole world feel like a sandpit. You know, it's an area to play and create and have fun.
I love that. So before we tell people where to find you, tell us about your multi-author book coming out.
So it comes out next Friday, the 8th of October, 2021. So it's called Aligned Leaders, and it'll be out on Amazon in 9 a.m. in local time zones in each jurisdiction and country. So it's coming out 9 a.m. US time, 9 a.m. UK time, European time, Australian time. And it's a very powerful set of stories about women who have stepped into being their potential, become the leaders that they were born to be, and break free of societal expectations in doing so.
Yeah. So support next Friday, the 8th, whatever that is in your time zone, Friday, the 8th at 9 a.m. It will be available on Kindle, 99 cents, and the links will be shared.
Thank you so much. I think there's about 25 stories in it. So it's great value for money and so many inspiring stories.
So much value. The beauty of these multi-author books is like hearing in this one space all these different perspectives, and there's similarities and there's differences. And to me, that's what the beauty of all of this is all of the voices that come together and listening to each other.
Yeah, and it goes back to, you know, storytelling is one of the most, you know, oldest forms of communication and learning. And we still, as human beings, are programmed to connect through stories. So I just love reading about other people's journeys.
Yeah, yeah. So on that note, can you please tell them how they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm mainly on Facebook. So join me at facebook.com/HelenHardware. And that's hardware like computers. And I have a group for spiritual entrepreneurs who want to find out how to get confident, how to unlock their authentic self and put themselves out there and get visible and speak their truth. That's called the Soulful Confidence Collective on Facebook. Or you can find me on my website, which is simply helenhardware.com.
Perfect. So, Helen, thank you so much for taking this hour to hang out with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. So actually, before I say my goodbyes, is there any final words of wisdom that you feel like you want to share?
Just the reminder to anyone listening that no matter what they've been through, what the background is, that they are enough just as they are, and they're safe to be creative in whatever way that shows up for them.
There we go. You are enough. So everybody, thank you so much for joining us here live. Thank you for those catching the replay. This space is all about inspiring each other, connecting each other, and sharing stories. It's what it's all about. So please like, follow, and share. I believe we've always needed this, and I think that we need it now more than ever for this connection. So I wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, a good evening, wherever you are in this world, and look forward to talking to you again soon. So goodbye, everybody.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye.